Thank you. Well, good morning. Oh, it does show up. I suddenly realized Mark was trying to tell me last night about the wall and what color the wall was, and I didn't really know what he was talking about until I saw it this morning, and I wasn't sure if my PowerPoint would show up, but it does. So we're in a good morning, everybody. We're in a series, most of you will know, where we've, for just over a year, we've been thinking about what it looks like to seek first the kingdom of God, and we've taken it a step further from that, thinking about what does kingdom culture look like. So we are living in the kingdom. Thank you, Daryl. Thank you. We are living in the kingdom. We're part of the kingdom. And so we have a culture. We have a way of living and behaving that others should be able to recognize. And so we're looking at different aspects of the kingdom. And this morning, I'm going to talk about walking by faith. 11.5 years ago, I woke up one morning and I felt God say to me, leave your country and your people and your father's household and go to a land I will show you. I was 6 months pregnant. The night before, Mark had been asked by Steve Thomas, who was our overseer, if we would consider moving to Niagara Falls to lead a church there. No, here. It took Mark quite a long time to hear from God about that one, but actually I woke up that morning with this verse going through my mind, and I knew that God was speaking and he was calling us to come to this place. Most of you will know I was far too pregnant to come over here, so Mark came over here in the May and decided, yes, this is what God was saying. The church agreed, that was you guys, and in August of 2005, Mark and I were here with Isaac, who was 8 weeks old, and we came and we bought a house and a car and a barbecue and maybe a tent as well, I'm not quite sure, and we were staying at the Andre's house, and we'd done all of this in about 3 days. I had an 8-week-old baby, I had 4 other children at home, I was trying to pack up and sell a house. I was incredibly hormonal, and it came to the Saturday evening of our week in Canada, and the next day, I think the ladies of the church had arranged something for me to meet the ladies. And I lay in, I think it was Laura's bedroom, and I sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. I sobbed so much that I couldn't even tell people what was wrong with me. I just couldn't stop crying. And Ricky and Linda were trying to console me and saying, what's wrong with you? And I just didn't know what was wrong. I was obviously hormonal and tired and everything. But I remember they said, maybe you should just go to bed. And I thought that's probably a good idea. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't want to meet anyone else. I've got lots of friends in England. I don't want to come to Canada. I don't feel like that anymore, by the way. But as I lay down in the bed, the light was off, and I looked up at the ceiling, and it was covered in those fluorescent stars. And I felt God say, go, and I will bless you, and you will be a blessing. And so we began a journey of faith. We had, I believe that we'd been walking in faith up to that point, but we began a journey that would test us in new ways and take us to new depths and heights. And in that journey, we found that he who calls is faithful. We are able to walk by faith because he is faithful. So if you can move on to the next slide, please. Hebrews 11 verse 1 says, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. And when we set out on a journey of faith, in fact, when we set out every single day, we have no idea what that day will hold. We have no idea what that journey will hold. But as we keep our eyes fixed on God, as our GPS, as it were, we set our sights on him and we keep our eyes fixed on him, the journey is exhilarating. Sometimes a little bit treacherous, but it is the most fulfilling way to live. I have never ever done that. I never plan to. Faith is fine for me. So we're going to take a look at how we can walk by faith through the story of the life of Abraham. I sat yesterday morning, if you could turn to the next slide. I sat yesterday morning and I read through the story of Abraham's life, and I would really, really encourage you to read it through. It's an incredible story. And so I have some chapters and verses that I'll be referring to this morning on the PowerPoint. And the story of Abraham's life really runs from Genesis 12 to 22. I've loved what Brad has done in throwing lots of scripture at us for us to feed on during the week. And I would encourage you to do that this week. I also pulled out various verses from the New Testament that refer to the life of Abraham and Sarah. And if you don't get these, then I'll be pulling them up later on. And as we were worshipping and Mark encouraged us to sit and wait on the Lord, I had a picture. Obviously, I've been thinking about Abraham and what God did with him and through him. And I had a picture, and it was like God was standing at Abraham's tent in the night, and he flung back the tent flaps and showed him the stars in the sky. And it was just an incredibly expansive picture of, and then God said, "See these stars, I'm going to make your descendants as numerous as them." And I, as we were worshiping this morning, I felt that what God wanted to do, and this is me stepping out in faith, because I don't think it's my work, but his. But I felt that what God wanted to do was like throw open our eyes to see something new of him and his goodness and what he wants to accomplish through us. It almost like dust off the shrouds to see something afresh, as Randy said about the abundance of rain coming. So that's partly what I'm carrying in my heart this morning. So what does walking by faith involve then? Walking by faith involves a call. Abraham was called. In Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, God comes to Abraham and he says, "Leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you." Abraham was from Ur. He was a Chaldean. And actually that culture and that the place that he came from, it was prosperous. It was a good place to live and be growing up at that time. And yet God called him out of that and said, "I'm going to take you somewhere, and I want you to follow me." So he was called by God. It also came with a promise. And in Genesis 12, verse 2 and 3, God says, "I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." So God doesn't just call him, but he promises something and says, "If you follow me, this is what I want to do to you, for you." And he doesn't just do it once, but he does it again and again and again. Through those chapters between Genesis 12 and 22, God keeps coming and affirming his promise. In chapter 13, he sets off with his nephew, Lot, and along the way they have a bit of a disagreement. There's a bit of quarreling going on, and Abraham says, "Okay, let's, you know, the land isn't big enough for both of us, so let's separate." And after they separate, God says to Abraham, "Look around you and see the land that I've put around you. I'm going to give this to you." So he reaffirms his promise. In Genesis chapter 15, verses 1 to 6, he comes to him again and he says, "I'm going to bless you through your offspring." The irony was he didn't have any offspring. His wife wasn't able to have children, but God says, "I'm going to do it through your child. I'm not just going to randomly bless you, but there's going to be something specific about it." In Genesis chapter 17, he comes again and he says, "I'm going to bless you. And because of this, I want to make a covenant with you. I'm going to promise that I'm going to bless you." And then there came the sign of circumcision just to seal that covenant that God made. Genesis 18, he comes again and he says, "You're going to have a son." By this stage, he's quite old. I think he was about 99, and God had called him when he was 75. So 24, 25 years had passed, and God comes again and says, "You're going to have a son, and I'm going to bless you through that son." And then in Genesis 21, when he's made a mess of things and Ishmael is on the scene, actually the promise includes Ishmael. God doesn't just say, "Oh, okay, that was a bit of a mistake, so we're going to forget about Ishmael." But no, he's your son. I'm going to bless you through Ishmael too, even through your mistakes. And then finally, in Genesis 22, after he has responded to God, asking him to sacrifice his son Isaac, God says again, because you've not withheld your only son from me, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to do what I've promised. So again and again and again, God comes and reaffirms his promise. And the interesting thing about this walk of faith is that actually it doesn't begin with us. It begins with God. It's initiated by him. And as we continue, we will see that actually it's carried out by him too. And as I was preparing this, I wanted to ask you a question. Is there a promise that you're holding on to that you have not yet seen fulfilled? Is there a promise that God has given you where you've waited and you've held on and it's not happened and you're living in disappointment? Then God would encourage you to dust it off. Dust off the promise. Ask him to speak to you again. And many times over the last number of years, I've had to do that, and I've had to say, God, speak your word again, because I need that encouragement. And he's longing to come and encourage us. We hear it in the morning as we worship. He wants to speak his words of life over us. So my encouragement is dust off the promise. Don't live in disappointment. It's not where he wants us to live, but he wants us to hold on to it and to hold on to him. So God initiates and then we get to respond. So walking by faith requires, first of all, an acknowledgement. I think before we can respond to God, there is something that we need to acknowledge. In John chapter 6, verse 29, Jesus says to his disciples, they say, what is the work that you've called us to do? And he says, your work is to believe. Your work is to believe the one who was sent. And that's what our job is. That's what God has called us to do. He's just called us to believe him. Like, it's not actually that difficult, and yet we all find it incredibly difficult. But God has called us to believe. And in order to do that, we have to recognize that the work that he's called us to is not our work. It's not about what we're doing in this place, but it's about what he's doing across the whole earth. And we just get to get involved in it. In Romans chapter 4, if you want to turn with me, this is an incredible chapter. I would encourage you to read it and sit in it maybe for a little while. I'm going to read a few verses of it to us this morning. So Romans chapter 4, starting at verse 2, and I'm going to hop around. In fact, if Abraham was justified by works, he had something to boast about, but not before God. What does Scripture say? Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. Now, when a man works, his wages are not credited to him as a gift, but as an obligation. However, to the man who does not work but trusts God, who justifies the wicked, his faith is credited as righteousness. Down to verse 16, it says, the promise comes by faith, so that it may be by grace and may not and be guaranteed to all Abraham's offspring. And then finally down to verse 20, it says, Abraham did not waver through unbelief regarding the promise of God, but was strengthened in his faith and gave glory to God, being fully persuaded that God had power to do what he had promised. And I've done quite a lot of thinking over the summer and in the last number of months about our work. God has called us to work, and sometimes we can feel really, really overwhelmed by the work that we have to do. Often that we can find ourselves in that place of either having too much or it feels too challenging. We feel like we might not be able to achieve it. But I, in my reading and my thinking and my praying, I'm trying to shift my thinking to realize that actually my work is not my work. It's God's work. I just get to join in. And one of the sort of ideas I've been reading around is the idea of rest and sleep and Sabbath, and a lot of people will talk about how actually God, we sleep and God is working. So God works where we're sleeping, and we just get up and do the second shift. Like, he's done most of the work beforehand. We just get up in the morning and join in with what he is already doing. And when we have that mentality, it changes the way that we live our lives. It changes the way that we walk through life, because actually all we have to do is our best. And some days our best isn't as good as others, but it's our best because it's his work, it's not ours. And when we try and take it on as our work, then it becomes heavy, it becomes burdensome, we get stressed and wearied by it. But that's not what God wants us to, how he wants us to live. He wants us to see, actually, all of this is my work, and I just want you to join in. Come and play with me. That's the way that he wants us to see it. And I think that's what Abraham saw. He saw that actually God had called him to something, but he couldn't make it happen. Like, I'm sure that he tried to have a baby lots of times, but it didn't happen. He could not make this happen. But actually, as he kept choosing to believe God, God made it happen. And it's just, I would encourage you to think about that as you go through this week, because we often take on this thing that, oh, I'm working for God, I've got to do this. But actually, he doesn't want us to live like that. He wants us to live in a place of rest. He wants us to work out of knowing that he's God, it's his work, and we just get to join in. In John 15, we've been in this passage many times over the last number of years. Jesus says, apart from me, you can do nothing. Like, we are the ones who have to abide. It's him that produces the fruit. We can't produce fruit. We just are not able to. But he does, as we look to him, as we live in him. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26 and 30-31, I love this passage. It says, he chose the weak and the foolish things of this world. Put your hand up if you feel weak and foolish a lot of the time. Woo! He's chosen us, and he wants to work through us, in us and through us, for his glory. If we think we're qualified, then I think we're in trouble. It's those of us who know we could be, Daryl, yes. It's those of us who know that we're weak and foolish, that we're able to say, God, I can't do this. I can't make this happen, but you can, because you are great and mighty. And then I'd like you to turn back with me again to Genesis 15. Genesis chapter 15, verse 7 to 21. He also said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to take possession of it. But Abraham said, O sovereign Lord, how can I know that I will gain possession of it? So the Lord said to him, bring me a heifer, a goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. Abraham brought all these things to him, cut them in two, and arranged the halves opposite each other. The birds, however, he did not cut. Then the birds of prey came down on the carcasses, but Abraham drove them away. As the sun was setting, Abraham fell into a deep sleep, and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. And then it goes on to talk about what God says while Abraham is asleep. And this is the story that we read here is when God reaffirms his promise and makes a covenant with Abraham. A covenant is an agreement between two parties where you bind yourself to each other with a promise to say, I'm going to fulfill my part of the promise. The interesting thing about this passage, and I absolutely love this story, is Abraham does all the preparation to make covenant with God. He gets the animals, cuts them in two, lays them either side of somewhere where the people could walk through, because that was the way that they did it. That was the way they made covenant. And then he falls asleep. And I think God put him into a deep sleep, because God, and what he was saying through this was, I want to make a covenant with you, Abraham. I'm going to promise that what I'm saying will be fulfilled. And because I know what you're like, and because I really, really mean this, actually what I'm going to do is make you go to sleep, and I'm going to make covenant with myself. And it talks about how there was a burning torch that walked through the animals, and God made covenant with Abraham to promise that he would fulfill the word that he'd spoken over to him. But actually, Abraham was nothing to do with it. And when God makes a covenant like this, where he is both parties, then it cannot be broken, because he is faithful and he will always remain faithful. And this is a powerful story of God saying, I really mean this. It's really going to happen. And so we have to acknowledge in our walk with God, as we walk by faith, that actually this is not our work. Our job is just to respond. And that's the second thing I wanted to say. So walking by faith requires a response. Now, God can call us and we can choose to ignore him, or we can choose to say yes. And in Genesis 12, going back to the beginning of that, the call of Abraham, it says, so Abraham left as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. He was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. And so Abraham responded, and actually in verse 8 it says he went on towards the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent, with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called it on the name of the Lord. Then Abraham set out and continued towards the Negev. And the interesting thing about Abraham is that when he responded, he didn't go to a place and settle, but he kept moving around as God led him. And he, like, I was sort of reading through this yesterday, it was quite fascinating reading it, and I was thinking, actually, I'm not quite sure what Abraham did. Like, I don't really know what his ministry was, because he just seemed to live his life and move around and do what God told him. And I was thinking about this and how often we get caught up on, what's my ministry? What am I going to be doing for God? And we separate it from our life. And I would encourage us to change our thinking, that actually where he calls us, that's our ministry. Where he's placed us every day, Monday to Friday, Saturday and Sunday, that's our ministry. We just live doing what he puts in front of us. And so we're walking in what he's called us to do. And he has called us to be a prophetic people. Not just on a Sunday morning when Daryl or Mark say, has anyone got a prophetic word? No, all the time we're called to live prophetically, because that's what he's called us to. Next slide. So walking by faith involves a number of other things, as well as being called, as well as involving a promise. Actually, that walk is tested again and again. And right at the beginning of that walk, when God calls Abraham to leave his country, a famine comes, and he's challenged in the area of his provision. Where will he get his provision? He's left his security. Will God still provide? Then it's tested relationally. There's a conflict between himself and Lot. And interesting enough, if you read the story of Abraham and Lot, you see that Abraham is incredibly generous and magnanimous to Lot. And he says, you choose where you'll go. And he doesn't look to sort of make things, sure things are fair or right, but he opens his hands to Lot and says, you choose, because I think there was something in his heart where he was settled, that he was where he would be okay, wherever God placed him. And later on, Lot gets into quite a lot of trouble and Abraham goes to rescue him. So he's very, very open-hearted towards that, despite the relational challenges that he's faced. In Genesis 15, when God says, I'm going to bless you through your son, there's a challenge because there's a lack of evidence. When God speaks to us, sometimes we can say, okay, well, yeah, you said that a while ago, but I see absolutely no evidence of that. Actually, we are tested in, will we still choose to believe, even though we don't see or understand? And then in Genesis 22, he has the promise. He has Isaac. God has promised, given him a son as he promised. And yet now he's asking him to sacrifice. The one through whom the promise is going to be fulfilled, God says, I want you to offer him as a sacrifice. He's tested. And each time he's tested, if you read through I would encourage you to read through the story a few times with, like, looking for different things each time. But as you read through looking at the testing, actually each time he seems to grow a little bit more. And that's what happens when we're tested. Actually, if we run to God in that place, then he strengthens us and he causes us to grow. He's also tempted in this place, and this is part of the testing. When the famine comes and he goes to Egypt, he's afraid. And the greatest enemy of faith is fear. And often God calls us to something and immediately we're facing a fear that the enemy seeks to throw at us. And in Abraham's fear, he lies. And he says to Sarah, just pretend that you're not my wife. Okay. And he actually does it twice. He doesn't learn from the first time, but he does it again in Genesis 20. God rescues him from that situation, but he's tempted out of his own fear. He's tempted to give in to the fear of others as well. So in Genesis 16, Sarah is afraid because she's saying, we haven't got any children, so you better have my maidservant. And he gives in to her fear. And we know what a mess that created later on and even now. So he gives in to the fear of others. Sarah laughs. She laughs when they come and they promise that they will have a son. And then because she's afraid, because they knew that she was laughing, she lied and said, I didn't laugh. It wasn't me. Must have been the goat. And so she laughs and she lies. She's afraid. And then in Genesis, that was no reference to Brad Simmons. I'd like us to read something from Genesis chapter 11. I'm hoping that you're in Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 11. And this is something that, a temptation that all of us face at one time or another. And it was actually out of this story that this is why I'm preaching today. And I'll tell you why. Let me read it first. No, I'm going to tell you the story first. Okay, so you know that we've been in a challenging season for a number of years, and Mark is doing a lot better. So as he has got better, so I have found life and all the things that I've been sort of trying to contend with catching up with me. So this year for me personally has been a challenging year, and I've had a number of physical challenges and a lot of emotional things as well. So I've been trying to process those and walk through those. And in the summer, I was at Camp Cockwer, and really I thought, okay, I'm going to take the summer, I'm going to get on top of this, and I'm going to then carry on. And in the summer, I came to realize that actually this has been a long process, and I just need to walk through the process of grieving and looking to God and trusting him. And like, I like things, okay, this week we're going to do this and then we're going to move on. Sometimes God doesn't work like that. And so in the middle of August, I just came to a place where I thought, actually, this could be a long process and I just need to be okay with that and get on with my life and deal with what I need to deal with as it comes up. So I'm in this new place of accepting where I'm at and still seeking to live by faith. And I have a busy couple of months that I'm in at the moment. And I found out at school that there is a PE conference. So I teach PE. I'm not quite sure why I teach PE, but I do. And I feel quite insecure about it because I'm not actually a PE teacher. And I found out that there's a conference, a PE conference, this week, in fact. And it's in Niagara Falls at the Scotiabank Centre. So, like, they do this. This is an Ontario conference that they do every year, and it's like right on our doorstep. So I was super excited about this. I asked our vice principal if I could do it as part of my professional development, but it's fairly expensive. So he sat me down and he asked me why I wanted to do it, and I'm feeling like I think this could be good, just not just for me as a PE teacher, but some other things that I feel that God is stirring in me at the moment. So I explained that to him, and he said, okay, so I'm going to let you make the decision, but no, because this is expensive, if there's anything else you want to do in the year in terms of professional development, we might have to say, actually, you've had your money for this year. So I sort of thought, oh, I didn't want to have to make the decision myself. So I went home and I thought, actually, like, I'm not in a brilliant place. I don't have as much energy as normal. It's a lot of money. I might not be able to do what I'm going to do later on in the year if I want to do something. So probably the sensible decision would be to say, no, I'm not going to do it. So I decided that. And then I just thought, oh, I guess I probably need to talk to my husband about it. And so Mark and I went out for coffee, and I just explained everything to him. It was very reasonable, rational. So I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go on Monday and say I'm not going to do it. And he said, why? Oh, I was really shocked that he would say that. And he said, you've always sought to say, God, if you open a door, I'll walk through it. And he said, this seems like God is opening a door. And he said, God, if God gives you something else to do later in the year, he'll provide that. And I'm sitting there, like, absolutely blown away on a number of fronts. Number one, my husband has not spoken into my life for about 7 years. Usually I talk to him about something and he just says, okay, whatever you think is right, you know, that's where he's been. And so, like, first of all, I'm just thinking, who are you and how dare you speak to me like this? Although he did used to speak to me like that. So firstly, I'm totally shocked by what is coming out of his mouth. And then secondly, I'm thinking, but this will really stretch me, because I know that if I go to this conference, I'll get really, really excited, and I don't have the emotional energy to get really excited, and I've got a number of other things coming up in the next few weeks. So, like, this totally threw me. I was looking to go out for coffee, get a rubber stamp, and then go and say, no, I'm not doing it. So I came out of, we were in McDonald's, best coffee, I think, and I'm thinking, oh, that didn't go as I thought. And I suddenly remembered this passage, and I want us to read it together. So, I'm reading from Genesis 11, verse 27. And I can't guarantee that I won't cry. Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran became the father of Lot. While his father was Terah was still alive, Haran died in Ur of the Chaldeans in the land of his birth. Abram and Nahor both married. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. The name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. She was the daughter of Haran, the father of both Milcah and Iscah. Now, Sarai was barren. She had no children. Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abram, and together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. Terah lived 205 years, and he died in Haran. And I think the challenge for us is to settle. Where, particularly when we've come out of a busy, a tiring time, a time that has stretched us, we need to deal with that. Like, we need to replenish our strength. I'm not saying that we go sort of gung-ho without thinking about anything or attending to ourselves emotionally and physically and doing everything that we need to do. But we walk a fine line between walking by faith and continuing the path that God has called us to, and not settling because we're tired and we're beaten up. Because many of us are. We're tired and we're beaten up. But God still calls us to live by faith. He still has more to do for us. And I think many, many of us, and this, I realize that this is my temptation. My temptation is, I have had 8 really, really difficult years. I am exhausted and I just want to rest. Like, I just want to do my work, come home, go to bed, just do my own stuff quietly. I want some comfort. This is really what I'm after. But that's not what God has called us to. He's not called us to settle. He's called us to continue walking with him into what he has for us. Okay. So that's why you're getting this sermon on faith. Because of that. So God, when we're walking by faith, we will be tempted in various ways. Next slide, please. So faith requires, so this is what faith requires from us. First of all, it requires a perspective. And in Hebrews 11, if you want to flip over to that with me, Hebrews chapter 11. Abraham had a perspective that was not natural. And I don't know how he had it. It was supernatural and it was given to him by God, because he didn't have the Bible. He didn't have everything that we have, the understanding that we had. In fact, he'd come from a pagan nation. He didn't even have a relationship with God, as far as we know. He came out of a pagan, idolatrous nation. God called him and revealed himself to Abraham. And Abraham saw something about God, and I have no idea how he did it. But in verse 8, it says, by faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he didn't know where he was going. By faith he made his home in the promised land, like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, he didn't settle, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise, for he was looking forward to a city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. He had a perspective that only God could have given him, that this was not about what's happening on this earth. If you read through Hebrews 11, it talks about how many of these men and women who lived by faith, responding to God, seeking to follow his call, didn't even see what the outcome, the fruit of what they were following, but they trusted him, knowing that his plan was bigger, and they had an eternal perspective that I think God wants us to have. And in that place, they were able to persevere. It says, the passage that I've read talks about how he went and he continued walking. In James chapter 1, verse 24, it says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, when you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work in you, so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything." So Abraham developed a perspective that was not man-made. It was something that God gave to him. And I think, I said this earlier, he set his GPS, like he knew where he was going. Actually, he didn't know where he was going, but he knew who'd called him. And he knew that he was faithful. And he just kept going, regardless of what he faced. And a lot of the times, some of the things that he faced, they were his own messes that he made, but he still kept focusing on God. And in order to do that, he needed to stay in hope. And in order for us to walk by faith, we have to have hope. And many, 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 many times, but if you're close to me, you'll know that I've come to you or the whole body and said, I need some fresh hope because I've lost hope. And when we lose hope, then we can't keep walking by faith. We can't keep persevering because it's hope that gives us energy to keep going. In the 1950s, there was a guy, and I don't want to get into sort of the ethical things of what he did, but he did an experiment with rats. And he put rats in a bucket of water that they couldn't get out of. And he found out that if they swam round and round and round, after about 15 minutes, they died because they were exhausted. But he did it again. I'm sure he did it a number of times, poor little rats. And he found out that if he took the rats out of the bucket and cleaned them off and dried them and pampered them a little bit and put them back in, they could swim for 60 hours. So they went from 15 minutes to 60 hours. And his conclusion in the 1950s was that they had hope, so they could keep going. And it's just a phenomenal story, like it's a phenomenal experiment, that actually when we have hope, we can keep going. When we lose hope, we stop and we are exhausted. But actually when we have hope, it gives us energy. It gives us energy to say, okay, I don't feel like I can get out of bed today. I am absolutely exhausted, but I'm going to get up and have another day. And we sometimes need people around us to say, I need some hope. And God has provided that for me again and again through many of you guys and through other situations. But we have to stay in hope in order to walk by faith. So finally, I'm going to just finish with a couple of thoughts about Abraham. When there's a verse that says in Romans 4, Romans 4 verse 19, it says, without weakening in his faith. And the first time you hear verses and you don't really hear them. The first time I really heard this one was when Corey Russell spoke. And he just talked about this verse. He didn't talk about it the way that I'm going to. And he read this verse and I thought, that is not true. He did weaken in his faith, and that's why I've got all those funny little exclamation marks at the end. Like, he was a disaster. In fact, if you show the next slide, Sophie, like, his life was not a straight line from going from, okay, God's called me out of my home to where he's taking me into glory. His life was like that. How many of you have a life like that? Yeah, so our life is not, yes, God has called me and off I go and here I'm going to everything that he's called us to. But often we'll take little detours and we'll go backwards and we'll fall over. That's what our lives are like. That's the reality of our lives. But actually, when God calls us and we set our focus on him and we follow him, regardless of the mistakes that we'll make, like we will make mistakes, like we're going to mess it up, we're going to get afraid, we're going to sin, we're going to do it. Like we just have to deal with that. I mean, we don't want to, obviously, and we're not planning to, but if we don't realize that we are weak, then we'll just get so disappointed that we might be tempted to give up. But we just, when we fall, he wants us to pick ourselves up and keep our focus on him and ask for his help again. And last week I had a word about God. There were people who were feeling like they had to be perfect to be able to keep going. And God is not looking for perfection. He's just looking for us to keep running to him in our weakness, because it's his work. It's not our work. It's his work that works in us. And when he looks at us, he says, without wavering in their faith. Like, I know the last 8 years, I have wavered again and again and again, and I've done some really stupid things. But actually, when God looks at me, he sees Jesus, and he sees my heart. And so this, in Genesis 15, verse 6, it says, Abraham believed the Lord. That's what he requires. He requires us to believe him, and that's what he credited to him as righteousness. Even the story of Sarah in 1 Peter 3, verse when is it? 1 Peter 3, verse 6. Sarah, it talks about how we're supposed to be as women. It says, you are her daughters if you do not give way to fear. I think she did give way to fear. Like, she didn't believe God. Like, she was as bad as Abraham at times. And yet, that's how God sees her. He calls us her daughters if we live by faith and not by fear. So then, finally, a few questions to ask us, make it a bit up close and personal. Where has God called you? Where are you planted right now? Where are you going this afternoon, tomorrow, through the week? That's where he's called you. For this season, that's where he's called you. What are the promises that he's spoken over your lives? Maybe you've forgotten them or dropped them or become disappointed. Then my encouragement is, ask him to restore them. Ask him to speak those promises again. Remember them. At the beginning of this year, I felt God say to me, it was a very weird word, forget the former things. I'm doing a new thing, and remember. So he told me to forget and remember, and he told me to remember his faithfulness, to remember his promises. And one of the things I've been doing throughout the summer, one of the things I was doing was reading through my journals from just before we came to Canada. And as I'm reading through my journals, I'm seeing his faithfulness leap from the page. Like the detail at which he spoke about things, and I had no idea what he was talking about. The detail is phenomenal. And my encouragement is for you to write things down even when you don't understand what you think God might be saying. Write your dreams down. Keep a record of them, because they will give you hope and faith later on when you come to read them. Where are you being tested or tempted right now? Ask God for help. He strengthens those who are weak. Ask him for fresh hope, fresh strength to keep pressing forward. Where are you tempted to settle? Where is fear ruling in your heart or tiredness? Ask God to restore and to bring fresh faith. And the final thing is, actually, when God spoke to Abraham, he often made a response. So if you read through the story chronologically, he just kept stopping and making altars to the Lord. Like, often he made an altar to the Lord. And then when God reaffirmed his promise, he said, now I want you to circumcise the males in your household just as a sign, okay? So there's nothing magical about circumcision. It's a sign of my promise. So I'm not recommending that we make altars or circumcise, go in for circumcision. circumcision, but actually maybe God is calling you to do something specific. Because otherwise we can hear the word and we can be encouraged momentarily, but we sit with it passively, and God wants us to get involved and he wants us to respond to what he's saying. And so my encouragement is, write it down. If God is speaking, write it down. Ask somebody to keep you accountable. I'm trying to live differently this year in my schoolwork, and I was talking to Mike and Liz Beaumont at the beginning of the summer, and so Mike said, okay, what are you going to do? And like Mike does. So I said, I'm thinking of doing this. He said, okay, we'll talk at Thanksgiving and find out how you're doing. So suddenly I've got this accountability. So, and because, you know, Mike's Mike, I sort of think, oh, I've got to do it because he's going to ask me. And so we spoke last weekend. It's good to hold ourselves accountable. This is what God's saying. I want to change, but I'm not going to do it if I'm just passively listening. I need to, what is God asking me to respond? An active response. And so here I am, 11 years, 1 month, and 1 day after moving to Canada. This happened on Friday. I became a Canadian citizen. I am one of the newest babes in the country. And I don't know why God has called us to Canada. I have no idea why he's called us here. 11 years ago, I had a bit of a sense of why he'd called us here, but he has stripped us and pared us down and taken things away from us. The only thing I know is that he called us here. I know he called us, and he hasn't said go back. So we're still here. So many times over the last 8 years, people have said to us, why don't you go back? Have you thought about going back? And I guess we did think about it, but my response is, I can hardly get up and do every day, let alone think about moving us back to England. But the bottom line is, God never said go back. He called us here. He hasn't said anything since. So we stay. So we're still walking by faith. We've set our GPS, and we're living our lives. The fruit, the ministry, the calling, that's his business. We just have to respond in faith.